My first novel, Thumper, is finished, and we are putting the photographs in there now and getting it ready to go, so I would like to read you an excerpt from Thumper. Thank you. And this book is written in present tense, second person. And you've gone through a whole bunch of stuff in here, and what you've done now is gotten yourself lost in the woods during a snowstorm. And you have fashioned a primitive lean-to and gone in there and fallen asleep. You wake and work your left hand out through your coat sleeve and check your fluorescent watch, surprised at how long you've been asleep and at how you haven't frozen to death. The falling snow has sealed the spaces between the pitchy needles of your primitive lean-to and drifted enough to close the small leeward opening. You could easily go back to sleep. Your feet and legs are numb, but you feel no pain. You might even survive. If not, it'd be weeks before you were missed and months before anyone found whatever the ants and beetles had left behind. And after all, what difference would it make to these ancient trees and silent rocks who must know how fleeting are the lives of men? The ground vibrates with a current, and you think you hear a faint hum seeping up through bedrock, through frozen soil and brown moss and white snow. It's getting louder. Alarmed, you crawl out of your lean-to and manage to stand. There's a foot and a half on the ground, and it's still coming down. The sky is strobing black and white and black. You feel the current passing up through the numbness. The hum grows into a deep chord, and now the trees sing a flinty, creaking chorus. You can't get your bearings because the world is spinning, and now the sky adds its oscillations to those of trees and rocks, all together blending into an unearthly chord unlike any other. It emanates not only from the earth, but from all points in space and time. You hear didgeridoos, strings, horns, flutes, timpani, jungle drums, harmonicas, calliopes, and every instrument ever played. You'd call it a heavenly chord, but it's equally hellish, both major and minor, but somehow never discordant. It includes the grunting of tortoises, the constant patter of cosmic rays, the cruel machines of war and industry, the wild cries of albatross, the screams of martyred innocents, the laughter of ecstatic children, the slow churning of magma in the heart of the world, the loon's lonely call, the chaotic din of colliding galaxies, the first stirrings of something big in the ocean's deepest chasm, the shrieking wind atop the Himalayas where Tibetan monks chant for peace, and from within you hear the beating of your heart, the whispering of your blood, and the ringing in your head. You fall to your knees in plumes of white powder. In a dizzying flash, you find yourself looking down at yourself as if from a branch not far above. From this perch, you watch your body rock and sway in time to the rhythm of eternity. You watch tears freeze upon your upturned cheeks and twinkle like sequins in magical light. Looking down deeper, you discover the snake of sadness coiled in the blood-dark cave of your heart. Oh, the snake sees beauty in sadness, all right. The zip-together mother and child sharing hot chocolate in their snowstorm dumpster. The valiant cancer victim clinging to life for one more excruciating breath, and one more, and one more. The cerebral palsied boy learning to walk using only his diaphragm. But by the same token, the snake can't help but see the sadness in beauty. In every vibrant bloom, you see the future, lifeless petals, crisp and brown. You cannot gaze into your lover's eyes without mourning for the moment when one of you cries alone. The snake knows the heart of joy is filled with sorrow, the heart of love with loneliness.